Okay, good morning. We're call to order the meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District Hearing Board on June 25th, 2025. And if you'd all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if we could have a roll call, please.
Member Johnson.
Here.
Member Ready.
Here.
Member Lapidus.
Here.
Member Anders.
Here.
Member Anderson.
Here.
Now we'll have the item number three, the administration of oath to Member Jim Anderson.
Member Anderson, if you can raise your right hand. Do you, Member Jim Anderson, solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which you are about to enter?
I do.
Thank you.
Item number four, approval of the October 15th, 2024 Hearing Board meeting minutes. If you've had the chance to review that.
I've had the chance to review them. I'd bring a motion to approve them as presented.
I second.
Okay. Member Johnson, if we can take public comment on the minutes.
Is there any speaker you'd like to speak on? I don't have any speaker cards for those. Okay, thank you.
Motion was made by Member Ready, seconded by Member Lapidus. Is that correct?
No.
Who made the second?
I made the motion.
Oh, I second.
Oh, thank you. Okay, motion to approve the minutes of the October 15th, 2024 meeting. Member Ready made the motion, seconded by Member Anders. Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Ready?
Yes.
Member Lapidus?
Yes.
Member Anders?
Yes.
Member Anderson?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Item number five, presentation of a new air quality metric, which can be used to determine compliance with stipulated order of abatement, case number 17-01, in the matter of California Department of Parks and Recreation, off highway motor vehicle recreation division, Oceano Dunes State Recreation Area. We'll have actually an introduction by Carl will be handling that.
Yes, thank you.
If you want to address anybody in regards to that you'll be handling.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tim McNulty.
Yes.
I think because this is a hearing, technically, we should probably swear in anybody who's going to give testimony before we start, and then we can go on from there. It's required by the statute. I realize we're not going to make any decisions today, but I think it's a cautious thing to do.
Okay. Would anybody who's planning on speaking today please stand and take the oath, please?
If you can just say you accept the oath after I read. Do you solemnly state under penalty of perjury that the evidence that you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, my name is Carl Tupper. I am the Assistant Air Pollution Control Officer, and I'm also the incoming APCO. So when Gary retires, I will be the APCO, and that starts in August. So if we could pull up, is the presentation, there we go. Okay, yes, so I'm going to give the introduction here and some background information, and then Professor Bauer, the chair of the scientific advisory group, will present the metric itself and explain how that works, and then we'll also hear from state parks. So why are we here today? Well, as you probably remember, at the last hearing board meeting on October 15th, which I unfortunately was not able to attend because I came down with COVID the night before. Your board directed, you passed a motion directing staff to develop an air quality metric that could be used for compliance determination in the stipulated order of abatement, and then to present it to you at the next hearing. So that's what we're doing here today. So just by way of background for you, but you know, more so just for the public and for the record, right now compliance with the stipulated order of abatement means to eliminate emissions in excess of naturally occurring emissions from the ODS VRA that contribute to downwind violations of state and federal air quality standards. So right now, compliance with that is determined through modeling, as I'm sure you all recall. And I think the direction that we got from you is you wanted a way to determine compliance that doesn't rely on the modeling, but that just looks at the measurements that we make, the ambient air quality data. So that's what we're going to, that's what we're here to discuss today. I'm gonna give a little bit of background and try to set the stage, and then, as I said, I'll hand it over to Bernie to explain the metric. But just by way of background, the evolution of the dust control. So right now, you can see in this map, there's a lot of the ODS VRA that is in dust controls or being managed in a way that provides a dust control benefit. So early years, 2015, 2016, 2017, before the stipulated order, there was, you know, less than 100 acres in dust controls. 2018, the SOA came into effect, and you can see since then, there's been a dramatic rise in the amount of land providing dust control benefits, such that today there's 740 acres, and it's been 740 acres for the last few years. And so this includes 400 acres of vegetation projects. So these are, you know, areas that previously had been bare sand, mostly in the riding area, that now have been vegetated. There was another 12 acres of straw treatment, but I believe that has been converted to vegetation now. So now we have 412 acres in vegetation. There's a small area, a seasonal closure. So this area, part of the year, is accessible to vehicles and to camping, and then part of the year is closed. And then lastly, there's this almost 300 acres of what's called the plover exclosure. So previously, this area had been open part of the year for recreation and then closed during the plover nesting season. So it kind of flip-flopped back and forth, but that's been permanent. That's been closed continuously for the last 4 years, and that closure results in a dust control benefit. So we include that in, you know, in the dust controls and in the accounting of emissions. So that's a lot of area of the park that's now being used for dust control. And state parks have spent a lot of money on this too, millions and millions of dollars. So there's, you know, two big questions here, right? How has air quality been affected by all this? And then is it enough? Has air quality improved enough? So we use a lot of metrics, different metrics, to kind of answer this first question. And as I'll show in the next few slides, and as I think you've all seen in the past, air quality is improving in response to these, to all the work that's been done. But the second question, is this enough? That has traditionally, we've relied on the model to tell us, to guide us and say, when have we gotten improvements in air quality? Or when have we reduced emissions enough to meet that goal of the SOA? That's always relied on the modeling. So some air quality trends. This is through 2024. We just presented this to our board of directors last week as part of our annual air quality report. You can see that the blue line is CDF and the kind of maroon line or orange line is MESA 2. And you can see we've always had many more exceedances of the state PM10 standard at those two sites, which are downwind of the Oceano Dunes. We've always had a lot more exceedances at those sites than at other sites. But what you can also see is that prior to 2018, we had between, you know, 60 and 100 per year. And then starting in 2018, there's been a dramatic decline such that last year in 2024, we had less than 20 at either site. So there has been a dramatic improvement, at least by this metric, the number of exceedances of the air of the 24-hour California standard. If we look at trends and annual averages, we see a similar story where Mesa 2 have always been higher than the other sites, and they still are, Mesa 2 and CDF, but it's come down a lot since 2018. And in fact, this year, for the very first time, both sites, CDF and Mesa 2, meet the state standard for annual average, which is an annual average of 20 micrograms per cubic meter. So we're definitely making progress. Some other air quality metrics that we track are the number of hours each year at these sites that are above 300 micrograms per cubic meter. There's not a standard associated with that level, but it is, we think, a useful metric just for tracking the frequency of these extreme PM events. And again, you can see that we used to have as many as 100 per year, and then it's come down pretty steadily, such that at CDF last year, we didn't have any. Mesa 2 has never been as bad as CDF, but you can also see that it's come down steadily, such that most recently in 2024, it's the fewest number of hours above this level that we've ever measured. But a lot of this, so how much of this has to do with the mitigation measures on the dunes, and how much of this is just variations in meteorology, right? You need wind to generate the PM. Some years are windier than others. And actually, if I can go back, between 2011 and 2017, there really wasn't much mitigation on the dunes. And yet you can see some years we had as high as 97, other years it was between 60 and 70. And that's really just due to, some years were windier than others. So it's obvious from the trends that things are improving, but how much of this variation is due to the windiness versus not? And you can see, so this is a graph of the frequency of wind events. We have a definition that we use for wind events that has to do with how windy it is and what direction the winds are coming from. And you can see that in a typical year, we get about 50. Last year was in that range. 2022 was abnormally windy. We had a high frequency of wind events. 2019 was a low year. But what you can see if you add the number of exceedances per year is that, again, pre-SOA, so 2016, 2017, we actually had more exceedances than wind events in a year. 2018, 2019, 2020, it was about the same. But then since 2021, this gap has opened up where we're having wind events, but we're not seeing as many exceedances. And that gap has widened year over year. Now, in 2024, we had the fewest number of, it was a decrease in exceedances from the previous year, which was a decrease from the year before that. But it also got progressively less windy over those years. So some of the improvements we are seeing, at least, in the last few years, might be due more to just being less windy. And again, these last few years, we haven't increased the footprint of the mitigations. It's been 740 year over year over year. So how much of what we're seeing is the mitigations? How much of what we're seeing is windiness? It's a thorny problem to unwind. So Rule 1001, our rule, tries to do this. It's based on a comparison to Oso Flacco and the assumption that Oso Flacco represents the park in its natural state. Now, there's some, that may not exactly be true, but that was the assumption when Rule 1001 was enacted. But anyways, you can see there's been a steady decline since the mitigations were rolled out. 2024 does look better than 2023, but not by much. And I think that's kind of indicating that we're really looking at, the decrease in exceedances that we saw earlier is probably more due to it just being less windy. And a slightly more nuanced metric like this one shows that they're about the same. An even more nuanced metric that we've developed is this so-called differences in differences analysis. I'm not going to go into the details of that. You can read about it in the staff report and in some of the references in there. I'm happy to answer questions. But basically, the idea with this one is we have three monitoring stations downwind of the Napomo Dunes, downwind of the Oceano Dunes, CDF, Mesa 2, and Oso Flacco. And the mitigations are all pretty much upwind of CDF and to a lesser extent MESA 2, but not upwind of Oso Flacco. And so if it's a windy year, it's going to be windy for all these sites. If we have influences of other sources like wildfires or dust that got transported in, like long-range transport of dust, it's going to influence all these sites. But changes in mitigations are really only going to influence CDF and to a lesser extent MESA 2. So the idea is we look at the ratio of CDF to Oso Flacco and we see how that ratio changes from year to year. And the change in that ratio should tell us something about how the mitigations are, you know, how effective the mitigations are, or the change in the mitigation effectiveness from year to year. So doing that analysis, which again, I'm glossing over a lot of the details, but when we do that analysis, the results are shown here. So for 2024, compared to the baseline, compared to pre-stipulated order, we're seeing a 39% decrease in PM10 at CDF on high wind days, on wind event days. And that's gone down pretty steadily. There is an incremental improvement from 2023 to 2024. We went from 38% to 39%. So a small incremental improvement, but not huge. And I think that makes sense. There wasn't really any change in the, at least in the footprint of the mitigations. So this kind of gets at disentangling changes in windiness versus the changes in the mitigation. MESA 2, we don't see quite as much of an improvement. Although again, MESA 2 is never as bad. And also, you know, most of these mitigations are upwind of CDF, not MESA 2. And MESA 2 also has open sand that's not part of the ODS-VRA, so where there's still emissions coming off of that. So we don't expect to see the same improvement at MESA 2 as we do at CDF, but you can see nonetheless, there are improvements. This year, we're calculating it was a 10% improvement over baseline. Last year, it was 22%. Year before that, it was basically a 14% improvement. I think if you look at the error bars, all these numbers are basically the same. There is an improvement. Whether it's 10%, whether it's 22%, it's going to vary a little bit year by year. I think we're just looking at some noise in the data. But the big picture here is that there is improvement, real improvement at both sites, CDF and MESA 2. So what does this mean in real terms? So a 39% improvement in wind event day PM10 at CDF means the following. What we actually measured at CDF on those days in 2024, the median concentration was 45 micrograms per cubic meter. If we hadn't had this 39% improvement, then what we predict we would have seen was 73 micrograms per cubic meter. So that's what a 39% improvement at CDF looks like. We went from a median concentration of 73 on wind event days down to 45. And at MESA 2, we went from what would have been 46 micrograms per cubic meter down to 41. So those are the improvements that this analysis indicates. So let's look at 2025 year to date. So by these simple metrics like exceedances of the state standard or the number of hours at CDF over 300, it looks like we're not doing as good as last year. We've had basically twice as many exceedances so far through, I believe, Monday at CDF than we did in 2024 or in 2023. And if we look at year-to-date hours over 300, we've already had 4 hours this year. We had none by this point last year and none by this point in 2023. So looking at this picture, it looks like, hey, maybe we're moving backwards. But the thing is, it's been a lot windier this year, right? 42 wind events so far versus only 28 last year and 35 the year before that. And if we now compare that to exceedances year to date, you can see that the gap that opened up in 2021 is still there. So we're still doing pretty good. We have more exceedances this year, but it's been a lot windier this year. There have been a lot more wind events this year than last year. And in fact, if you kind of compare 2025 to 2021, where we had about the same number of wind events, you can see we have fewer exceedances in 2025 than we did in 2021. So all of this is to say that it's complicated. I think we would all prefer a very simple metric, you know, the number of days above 50, the number of state standard exceedances, or the number of, you know, Rule 1001 violations. But unfortunately, it's a little bit more complicated than that, which is why we've gone, in the past, we developed this differences and differences analysis. But we took your direction and we talked about it with the scientific advisory group and came up with something that I think is better than these very simple metrics that don't account for differences in windiness, but is a little bit more understandable and digestible than our difference in differences metric. Or, you know, I didn't talk about it in this presentation, but state parks and DRI have developed the so-called total PM10 to total wind power density metric, which is also, it's a mouthful to say, it's kind of complicated to wrap your head around. So I'll let Bernie Bauer from the scientific advisory group describe the metric that the SAG came up with. The district, we think it's a good tool. So I'll leave it to Bernie, but I do just want to conclude by saying that the metrics we already have show clear improvements in air quality, show that the mitigations where we've put out there are doing what they're intended to do, to such an extent that the levels at CDF have improved so much that now it looks about the same as MESA 2. MESA 2 has also improved, but they've both come down. Now they're about the same. And up till now, we've used the modeling to answer the question, is this enough? But the metric that Professor Bauer is going to present, I think, you know, was intended to fulfill your direction and give us a metric that we can, that's based on measurement that we can use to determine if we're in compliance, or at least if we remain in compliance. So I don't know if we want to do questions now or wait until everyone's presented and then do questions, but I'm, you know, obviously I'm here and available for questions whenever the chair would like to entertain them.
Carl, do you have OSO Flacco numbers for this year?
I don't have year-to-date exceedances at OSO Flacco. Is it two? Okay.
Two? Okay. So we're significantly higher at CDF and MESA 2, but not at OSO Flacco.
Well, I don't know how many we had year-to-date in previous years at OSO Flacco. So I can't.
Two's a low number.
Two's a low number for sure. Usually we've had like for the whole year, we've had single digit number of exceedances at OSO Flacco.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Plover area became permanently banning the vehicles on that site. When did that happen?
That happened in, I believe 2021 was the first year that we, you know, does that sound right? State parks, yeah, 2021. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is that ban on the area?
It's up in the air. That was originally done not by us, not to fulfill anything to do with air quality, but because they're with the Coastal Commission. And, you know, there was some litigation around that, which is now mostly resolved. So at least by that it's no longer required to be permanently closed by the Coastal Commission. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the future. But when we approved our annual report and work plans, there's always been a condition since the Plover exclosure was closed down, that if it were to ever reopen, state parks would need to simultaneously implement dust controls elsewhere sufficient to offset the increase from reopening it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Now it's on.
Yes.
Great. Okay, well, thanks very much for the invitation to come talk to you about this metric that we've been working on for the last 6 months or so, looking at the data. So thanks to the scientific advisory group members for helping out with this task. And what I want to do is sort of set the stage a little bit like what Carl has done, where we were last October, to remind us about how compliance is assessed at the moment. And it is through modeling, the DRI, Desert Research Institute model. And the core of it is that the ODSVRA is divided into different management zones, those colored blocks on the left hand. And there's a lot of data analysis that's gone behind identifying those zones in terms of the pi swirl emissivity measurements that have been done since 2013. So there's thousands of measurements now on the ground of dust emission potential. And it looks a little bit complicated, but it refers to many of the zones that Carl alluded to. So there's the plover exclosure, there's these large vegetation islands, there are riding area zones and non-riding area zones that reflect the north-south gradient in emissivity, likely due to grain size differences from the north to the south. There's the four dune restoration area and experimental area, the seasonal exclosure. So anyway, the bottom line is we've got these zones that are inputted into the model using a GIS system. And each of those is given a particular emissivity power relationship that allows us to predict what the potential emission is as wind is modeled over the landscape. And so a part of the modeling is a well-accepted wind model. And as you are all aware that we're focusing on the 10 highest days from 2013 to drive the model. So we're looking at sort of maximum potential emissions. And one of the things that's done is try to put together a landscape from 1939 air photo reconstruction and our best guesses or estimates of what the emission potential is from different zones. So you see on the left-hand side the 1939 model landscape, three major zones, because of course there was no riding at the time or there was minimal human influence. And we've assigned those emission curves. And on the right-hand side, you see the 2024 landscape. And you see some sort of bright neon greens. And that's what's referred to as a vegetation cover mask. So air photo reconstruction of what the actual vegetation looked like. And that gets draped over the zones because the vegetation areas have zero emissivity or given zero emissivity in the model. And then the winds get blown over that. And there are some, I can't remember exactly, 600,000 grid cells in there that get modeled for these wind speeds and emission. And those basically just get added up, right? So then at the end of it, we get these sort of emission maps. On the left-hand side shows what the emissions are, grams per square meter per day for the pre-disturbance scenario. And on the right-hand side is the 2024 surface, and you can see that the red and orange areas are more emissions, dust emissions, and the greens and the blues are less dust emissions. So again, those get added up, and at least last year, the suggestion was from this modeling that the ODSVRA was in compliance. And so if you sum up the 2024 values, you get 148 tons per day. And from the pre-disturbance landscape, there's 166 tons per day. And so the current emissions are less than what the predicted pre-disturbance scenario is. Right? So there's a little bit of a buffer there. Now, I do want to warn you that when we are here in October again, these numbers will change, right? Slightly, they won't be the same numbers because there's going to be different emission data added into the model. DRI did another really extensive pi swirl campaign this past year. In two parts of the season. And so those get added up into the data set that gives us the predictive curves. And there were some minor tweaks to the modeling, which will be reported on as well. So those numbers are going to change slightly. We'll see where we end up in terms of compliance assessment. So that's kind of the background. And then, you know, this is all pretty complicated stuff. you know, we want to try to simplify the message as much as possible, which was your request to try to develop a metric based on actual data rather than this, you know, magic modeling stuff, okay? Now, as Carl, you know, has suggested, most of the trends that we see in terms of data metrics that we reported on are moving in the right direction. And so, you know, we reported some of these last October, and Carl reiterated, so I don't really need to do much here except that there are, you know, reductions in the number of hours of PM10s exceeding 300 micrograms per cubic meter, reduction in the annual violations of Rule 1001, reductions in the number of exceedances of the ambient air quality standards of California, which is 50 micrograms per cubic meter averaged over 24 hours. And then that other complicated metric that DRI has produced, which is the total PM10 over total wind power density. Well, here's the metric that we propose. And so I just wanted to get it out in front of you. And hopefully you've had time to read Carl's executive summary, as well as the attachment, the more detailed report that we provided. And that's what it looks like. And so what you see is that from 2018 to 2019, the values are up around 20. And let's not worry about the units too much, but it's basically a ratio of dust concentrations normalized by the wind speeds. So we take account the wind speeds from year to year, okay? And these are annual values. And so you see over in the right-hand side, since about 2020, 2021, it's kind of leveled off. And when we developed the metric, we didn't have the 2024 data available to us. Carl has actually reproduced the results, which is what somebody should be able to do, access the data set, follow our procedures, right, and get a value. And so he's reproduced these numbers, and he's taken it out to 2024, and the value is about the same as the 2023 value. Okay, so that's the metric, and I'll talk a little bit more about how we got there. So the basic data set that we looked at is really extensive, all right? Lots of data been collected by APCD. So we looked at everything from 2016 to 2023 inclusive. That's 8 complete years. As I say, we didn't have the 2024 data. We're looking at the hourly values of PM10 concentrations that are collected at CDF at Mesa 2 and Oso Flaco, and wind speed and direction, both at S1, which is a station in the park that DRI has been looking at and Parks has been evaluating, and as well as the station at CDF, all right? And the wind speeds, as you can imagine, the wind directions are slightly different between S1 and CDF because the wind field comes and goes across terrain and is, you know, funneled and et cetera. Generally lower wind speeds at CDF than you see in the park. But we actually think the park is probably more representative of what's coming in across the landscape there and that for the potential of dust generation. So we sort of focus more on the S1 wind speeds. So that's over 70,000 hours, you know, for each station and times 7. So it's a huge data set that we looked at, and that's the basis for this metric. As an academic, I'm a little bit interested in, I guess you could say I'm a kind of a data geek, you know, and so I like to do the analysis, and you'll see that stuff reflected in my report. I didn't want to bore you with it here or sidetrack us, but I thought this was kind of interesting. One of the ways we sliced and diced the data was to say, okay, let's look at all the Rule 1001 violations in that period, and I've got those charted out, and Carl's shown those numbers as well. But then there are these interesting multiple day events, right, where it's not just a single day, but there may be 2 days in a row or 3 days in a row, or in some cases up to 11 days in a row where that Rule 1001 was exceeded. Now, the vertical bars here show you the number of events in that category, either a 1 day or a 2 day or a 3 day. And if you look at the left-hand side, say 2018 or 2016 or 2017, you see a whole bunch of bars. Right, and so the black bar is the 1 day event, then the red bar is the 2 day events, and the green is the 3, et cetera, et cetera. And so you see that there were multiple day events in those early years, but you get out to the right hand side, and 2023 in particular, all you have is single day and double day events. You don't have these long lasting events anymore. And arguably those, you know, 3, 4, 5 day events are pretty strenuous in terms of public health, right? And so this is just one of the good news stories, I think, that has come out of the efforts that Parks has put into trying to mitigate dust from the, and this is not one that you've seen prior to this, right, that Carl has presented on, but again, it's consistent with what we think we're finding. So I just wanted to show that out of general interest. The other thing that you haven't seen much is the sort of the time series, the hourly time series, in part because the state standard is a 24-hour average, right? And I don't know the history of it totally, but I would contend that when that standard was established, and I've talked to some of the CARB people, it was because the monitoring was pretty difficult. It was done with filters, right? And you can't exchange the filter every hour. You know, that's a really labor-intensive process to calculate the mass. So they do it on an hourly basis. They put the filter out, they collect the next day, they analyze it, you know, put a new filter out. And so you get a 24-hour average. But when you look at these kind of detailed graphs, and these are some of these multiple day events. The one on the left, for example, is March in 2016. So there's a 6 or 7 day event there. What you see is there's a peak period, right? And it's not surprising. I mean, when you're out at the beach or you're out in the community, you know, it's windier during the middle of the day, and at night it calms down, right? And so at night, we've got relatively low concentrations, but during the middle of the day, you've got high concentrations, right? And so the state average, the 24-hour, averages these numbers, right? And so maybe that's not the best thing to be thinking about in terms of health effects, because people are out during the day, right, and exposed to these rather higher numbers, right, than at night. Anyway, so there's, you know, and we've sliced and diced these data in many different ways to show that that's consistent, not just through these multiple day events, but through any event, there's a peak during the day. So what did we decide to do? Well, we decided to focus on those periods with large PM10 concentrations because they are arguably the periods that are of greatest interest to us. So we're ignoring the small PM10 concentrations that aren't likely to have health impacts. And we're not using the 24 hours, right? So we're focusing on that period between 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. when the wind speeds increase and when the PM10 concentrations increase. And we're not dealing with the nighttime periods, those 15 hours when things are relatively low. We also apply a directional filter to it. And so there you see a graph that doesn't look like it has a lot of points, but if in fact they're stacked really high in the middle there, there's like 70,000 points there, okay? These are all the hourly data that show in a polar plot such as this, the hourly concentrations at CDF versus the S1 wind directions. And you can see there's that little arm that goes up to the top left out of the north. So the wind out of the northwest is driving many of these large events, right? There are some scattered ones off onto the right where wind is coming offshore, offshore, and not sure what's generating those. And we didn't do a super job of filtering all these data, so they may be fire events. I just don't know, okay? Carl has ambitions of doing a much better job for this if you believe that this metric is useful. Anyway, so what we decided to do was kind of focus on that quadrant, if you will, out of the northwest, and here's it's the hourly data from all the 6 day multiple day events in 2016 and 17 when there weren't many of the dust mitigation efforts, and what you see is sort of a daily cycle again in terms of the wind speed on the top panel. So the wind increases from about 9, decreases by around 5 or 6 again. And that shows you the spread of the wind speeds there. Now, these are the CDF data, okay, not the S1 data. And what you see during that period is that the wind directions is really pretty steady. It's out of that sort of 270 to 360 quadrant, right? We don't have many instances where the wind is coming from any other direction. So, you know, in those nighttime periods, the wind can be coming from all different kinds of directions. But in the peak hours, you know, because of the land sea breeze that we have characteristic of the coast of California here, you do get those peak and fairly steady directional conditions. So, so what are the data filters we apply to try to figure out what these events are? We consider all the hourly data, okay, that we have available to us from 2016 to 2023. We only use the daytime hours, 9 to 6 p.m. And for every day, we calculate the mean values, that 9 to 6 mean value, for the PM10 concentrations and also for the wind speed and direction that goes with it, okay? And that sort of constitutes the first part of the data set. Then we filter out all the 9 to 6 PM10 concentrations that average above 99.9, basically 100 micrograms per cubic meter. I don't want to get into reasons for it. It's explained in the report, but I can come back and say why that we think that's legitimate. It could be tweaked, but it's just where we think that there's an appropriate cutoff threshold. We apply a directional filter to then isolate those days, you know, to a particular directional window to identify those events and take out the other events that might be due to as I say, fire or any other kind of a problem. And those are then identify what we have event days needed to quantify the metric. Okay, so they're large concentrations, large wind speeds, and a particular directional window. Okay, so those are the events. We could identify these differently. Carl has played around with the data as well, and he's come at it from a different direction, identifying the wind events rather than the dust events. And it turns out to produce pretty much the same kind of result in terms of the trends for the metric. Now, just as a check, remember that 100 micrograms per cubic meter thing. What I did was I calculated the number of events for each of the years and compared them to the real 1001 violations. And they track pretty much, I won't say perfectly, but they track pretty well. And so we're seeing the same kind of thing, two completely different ways of approaching the data, right? Because the rule 1001 violation depends on the OSO flaco, right? That's the trigger, right? The exceedance of CDF over the OSO flaco. And we've argued in the past that, you know, we think the idea of using OSO flaco as a control site is really good, but the OSO flaco site itself may not be the best control site for this kind of an analysis. Now we also have to take into account the wind, the windiness, because what you see in the upper part are the concentrations for each of the year, and in the lower part you see the actual mean wind speeds, the 9 to 6 mean wind speeds, and they change, right? And so it's gotten windier in these past conditions, even though the dust has gone down. And then ultimately we do a division of these 9 to 6 PM10 concentrations daily divided by the 9 to 6 wind speed from S1 to get the result. And that's what creates this graph, okay? So these are for the CDF site. And what you see is some vertical bars there. And the vertical bars are simply the standard deviations around those mean values. So we've got all the daily values in there. That is one measure of uncertainty. Carl and I have talked about other measures of uncertainty that may be more appropriate, root mean square error or some other things. But each one of these, you know, green triangles is the average of a large number of events. And so we want to get some sense of the spread. And what's interesting is you can see that the range of those purple bars has actually decreased, right? And so not only has the mean value come down, but the variability in those data has come down, which I think is another positive message. Now, one of the things we don't know is, you know, what is a threshold value? So you're interested to make an evaluation in compliance, right? And so what is the right number to say, you know, there's compliance based on this relatively simple metric, database metric? And we don't have a direct answer for you, but since about 2023, according to the modeling, the parks has been in compliance, all right? So the current emissions are less than the 1939 pre-disturbance emission. So we use the model to assess compliance, and that's what's in the SOA. And if we use that as guidance, then we might suggest that that value of around 13 would be a reasonable threshold. And so you could say that, you know, that might be an acceptable range going forward. And we can use this, I would argue, not to assess compliance. I think that's the wrong way to go. I think we need to rely on the model for compliance. But this gives us an indication of whether we're on track and we're staying on track. So if that number starts to creep up, then we should be saying, well, let's think about what's going on in more detail. And if it's going down, we should also be thinking about, well, let's think about what's going on in detail. Neither of those of markers should suggest that immediate action needs to be taken, because there is variation from year to year. So we expect some fluctuations in there. And I would argue that if that, you know, green triangle for 2024 has moved up a little bit, it's probably not a big deal. It's annual variation. If it moves up a lot, if it goes back to, say, the 2016 value, then something's really wrong and we need to investigate it. Similarly, if it goes down, I don't think that there's an argument necessarily to say, oh, let's take some of these treatments out and provide them access, right? Provide more OHV access to these, right? So neither of those should necessarily trigger an action, but it's a sentinel that we can begin to look at and track progress. So I've got to make some selling points for this metric. I'm not selling a product, but I want to convince you that, you know, this is probably in line with what your request was. So there's no complex modeling to this, right? It's just raw data. It's an analysis of raw data. There's no predictive equations. There's no academic magic behind this, right? It's just processing the data. It's based on hourly PM10 measurements at CDF, and those are collected routinely, have been, will continue to be collected. High standards for quality assurance and quality control on those data, right? All using federally accepted methods. Factors in the changing wind conditions, which we really need to look at in terms of facilitating year-to-year comparisons. It's easy to calculate, simple to understand, I think. It's just one graph, right? And you can see the trends in the graph. It's reliable and robust, I would argue, and the trends are consistent with all the other metrics that we've produced and all the data analysis we've done so far. And finally, it's not dependent on measurements from Oso-Flacco control site, and that's a complicated kind of game, I think, all right? So I purposely tried to avoid that when developing this metric. It was informed by what's going on because we looked at the real 1001 exceedances, right, the violations, as a guide to what's going on, as you saw those numbers track. But this one isn't dependent on it. And so there's some caveats here, which I wanted you to be aware of, and those are also available in that report. Dust emission from sandy surfaces and then the subsequent transport and dispersion process are really complicated, right? So they're not easily represented by a simple data metric. Lots of spatial and temporal variability. We've seen some of the temporal variability, and I haven't talked much about the spatial variability, but we know from looking at the pi swirl data, it's a complex surface, right? And it's not the same everywhere. Also, you have to recognize that whenever you've got a single measurement from a single fixed instrument at a particular location, it represents that particular location well, but it doesn't necessarily represent what's going on in a broader region. All right, so we do need to think about using some of the comprehensive data that are coming from the networks. Adopting the threshold condition or that critical value, as I discussed, is for triggering management responses is not recommended. At least I don't think it should be recommended. It gives you a gauge, lets you know what's going on, says, you know, maybe we're in trouble, maybe we're not in trouble, but it doesn't need to trigger an action right away. The assessment of progress towards the management objectives in the SOA are based on, I think, the preponderance of scientific evidence. And what we've shown is that regardless of how you slice the data, and it's showing the same trends, and it's consistent with what we see in the modeling. So overall, the story is telling the same story, like the methods are telling the same story. And again, can't say this strongly enough, the SOA depends on modeling outcomes, and I think that's still the most reliable methodology for trying to assess compliance with the SOA, and it's based on extensive pi swirl measurements, thousands of data points, and comparing to that pre-disturbance scenario that we've put together. Okay, that's it for me.
Any board member questions?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Bauer.
Oh, I just had a comment.
Sorry.
I'd just like to say thank you for the evaluation.
I think it's it may lead us in the right direction as far as having a number that's simple to understand for the public and that correlates extremely well, it appears, to historic data and also the modeling that's been done.
Great, thank you very much. I actually enjoyed the exercise. It allows me, you know, to get really into the meat of it. You know, my role as chair of the scientific advisory group is more administrative, and we do provide advice to both parties, but this really allowed me to get a really firm grasp on what I think is going on. So I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
So a quick question.
Yeah.
I know you're trying to eliminate Oso Flacco from the equation, but do you have data, similar data from Oso Flacco using this metric?
No, I didn't do it for Mesa 2 and I didn't do it for Oso Flacco because I wanted to sort of get this out in front of everybody to see if it's going in the right direction. But that certainly can be done, and I think Carl has done it for Mesa 2 already. I don't think you've done it for Oso Flacco, but it could easily be done. I think you'd have a small number of events. Not sure you would find the exceedances of that 100 micrograms per cubic meter averaged over those days, because it's a completely different landscape down there, right?
I'm just thinking it would be nice to have some measurement independent of the modeling prediction to compare to over time, because there's a little bit of confirmation bias. If we're using the modeling standard for our norm, then we're still tied back to the modeling. It'd be nice to have some sort of standard that is independent of the modeling. So looking at how this number compares to Oso Flacco's number would be another way to determine how we're doing.
I agree with the last part. It is likely, it would be interesting to do that, to see what the Oso Flacco results show. I'm not sure it addresses your confirmation bias, because the reality is we don't have data that go back to 1939, right? What we would like to do is say, do we have the PM10 concentration and wind speed measurements going back to a pre-disturbance state? And that establishes our threshold. The only way we can do that is do the best guess through the model. But I appreciate what you're saying. And if the board, you know, so desires and accepts this as a reasonable metric, I think you're free to say to Carl, please develop the metric for Mesa 2 and for Oso Flacco, and let's see what pops out. You know, the scientific advisory group doesn't, we're not consultants in that way, right? You know, we respond to your requests, okay? And we are an instrument of the SOA, which is under your control. We're not consultants in the sense that you direct us to do something. So it's not something we would undertake, but the APCD can certainly undertake it, their staff.
Thanks.
Can you talk a little more about the concerns about using that metric as an enforceable level? Obviously the modeling is superior, it's more thorough, and so on. But you know, can you give a little more insight into why you recommend not using that as an enforceable limit, but a monitoring number?
First, it's not consistent with the SOA as it's currently constructed, right? So there's a legal instrument in front of us that says, you know, the modeling is what should be relied upon. Second, I think that choosing that threshold value to decide compliance is a decision that you would need to make, right? What is the appropriate level? And Carl and I have had some discussions about that, and Carl has some ideas, I think. But you would need to think about what the appropriate measure of uncertainty around that is. If you could pick that value, let's call it, based on the graph, let's call it 13, right? And then you've got standard deviation of maybe 2, and so that takes you up to 15 and down to 11, right? So that might be the acceptable range, however you want to define that. And so as long as you're within that range, you could say, well, there's compliance, right? But that would be a decision that you would need to make, right? We certainly wouldn't do it. And we would need to explore more of the range of uncertainty. But I think what you can do is think about how this moves forward, and maybe we don't have enough data yet. We'd like to see the 2024 data, the 2025 data, and to show that, you know, that trend is actually leveled off, because there hasn't been any new mitigation efforts in the park for the last 3 years, right? There's some transitioning from hay to vegetation. There's Also efforts put towards reestablishing vegetation where it's got buried, so that it's ongoing maintenance at this point. But we'd like to see that value level off, and that would give us more comfort. So I think it would be a little premature to say, yeah, we can just change this metric right now. I would say, you know, let's use the cautionary principle and see where it is. Yeah?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Bauer. Mount State Parks.
Good morning, Hearing Board. I'm John O'Brien. I'm the 2019 amendment of the SOA identified as State Parks Air Quality Project Manager. And so I'm the person in that role and currently the acting district superintendent of Oceana Dunes District. So I'm going to talk, I'm going to give a couple of comments on compliance with the SOA and some of the different metrics that are being used. I'm going to go through it pretty quickly as Mr. Tupper and Dr. Bauer have covered some of this. So as Dr. Bauer mentioned, compliance with the SOA is currently based on the air quality model, and that is that was developed by the Desert Research Institute and endorsed by the Scientific Advisory Group. And as per the framework that the Scientific Advisory Group developed, it was essentially comparing a pre-disturbance scenario, you know, 1939, versus a current scenario. And these we're continuing to refine the model, as Dr. Bauer mentioned, but as per the 2024 annual report and work plan, the pre-disturbance scenario was 166 metric tons per day, and the current is 148 metric tons per day. So as per this, State Parks is currently in compliance with the SOA. So Mr. Tupper mentioned, and Dr. Bauer as well, that there are several different metrics that we're using as a preponderance of evidence. You know, are the modeling results indicative of what's actually happening on the ground, what's measured at air quality monitoring stations downwind of ODS-VRA? And so Mr. Tupper mentioned this one. This is an air quality metric that was developed by the Desert Research Institute. It's on the complex side, but it's essentially taking the total PM10, in this case it's measured at CDF, by the total wind power densities, which is calculated based on the S1 tower. And you can see on the left-hand side of the screen, you've got 2013, and then there's a clump of 2014 through 2016. But then you can see there's a steady decline over time as the acreage of dust mitigation projects have gone in place. And so there's basically from 2013 to 2023, 2024, there's been a steady decline in this ratio of total PM10. And then Carl, Mr. Tupper talked about this. This is something that was developed by the SLO APCD. I won't go into detail here, but one thing that catches my eye is there has been a steady decrease in exceedances of the state standard over time. And it goes up and down, as Mr. Tupper said, depending on the winds, but there has been a decrease. And then finally, the annual violations of Rule 1001, you can see from 2017 to 2024, there has been a decline in that. And that's looking at PM10 concentrations and essentially comparing it to Osoflaco. And one thing that Dr. Bauer mentioned is Osoflaco isn't a great comparison to CDF and Mesa 2, just given the amount of vegetation that's down in the Osoflaco, that's upwind of Osoflaco, including a lot of non-native plants, European beach grass, which essentially forms a sheet of vegetation across the dunes. And then finally, here's the metric that the SAG developed as per the hearing board meeting in October. And again, this Dr. Bauer went into how this was developed, but again, there's a steady decline in this ratio over time. So all of this is to show that the preponderance of evidence that there are real world measured improvements of air quality downwind of ODS-VRA. So State Parks is in support of the Scientific Advisory Group new metric that was developed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a quick question.
Mr. Brian?
Is it anticipated that with additional time, the current mitigation efforts will improve emissivity based on maturing of the plants, or do we think we're at a stage where that's it, this is as good as it's going to get?
The thought is that there will be improvements over time. There are several projects that are fairly new that were, you know, as Dr. Bauer mentioned, we've been planting projects over time. We've been doing supplemental planting in areas that have been kind of sand has overtaken them. There are some projects that were straw and they're continuing to be planted now. So the thought is over time, as the vegetation develops, there will continue to be improvements.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. O'Brien? Thank you. Okay, now we'll go to accepting public comment. I have two speaker cards. Saw a few other people. Would you like to turn? I saw you stand for the oath. Okay, thank you. Okay, and all these are in number. And then for Ms. Reynolds and Hines, this is all on item number 5. You want to speak?
You're speaking all on this item that we're currently discussing.
Okay. Just want to clarify that. Anyhow, we'll start with Chris Sorensen.
So this is Chris Sorensen. I'm a former resident of Napomo Mesa. I moved to Santa Maria here recently, but I continue to be very interested in this subject. I'm still downwind to the SVRSA, not quite as close to the plume as I was. Anyway, an impressive amount of evidence and information. I think the progress toward using data is excellent. I appreciate the presentations today. They were very useful. I have one basic question for the technical side. The one chart there that shows the metric, how it's behaved over since 2016, see this dramatic increase to 2020, and then the statement in the SAG memo says it's been pretty stable since then. It's improved a little bit, but we all know that a lot's been done out there at the park for that period of time. So is that a very good measure of what's been done, what's been accomplished by the mitigations that have been put in place? It seems like this metric's not very sensitive to those things. So the way I look at that chart that I showed, if you were to roll back to the level of mitigation you had in 2020, you wouldn't have changed things very much. That chart would look pretty much the same. So the question is, why is that? Is this really a good indicator? I think it's a really interesting indicator. I'd like to see it continue to be done. I think it's useful, but it doesn't show compliance, never will. And if you looked at it to show compliance, you could roll back the mitigations and still be in compliance to a great degree. So it's not useful in that sense. So I agree with you in that regard. Health is a cumulative effect over time. It's the total amount of the stuff you get in your lungs. So it's a factor of how much time you spend in the plume in the daytime when you're breathing it. That's a hard thing to get to. So that's why the state standard is the average over 24 hours, because we can't tell what people are doing, but we know in general, if we keep the environment at a level that seems reasonably safe, the health is going to be improved. So this use of peak hours, it makes sense to do that because that's where most of the dust is in our day, and I think that's a good idea. But I would like to see maybe that threshold of 100 micrograms come down a bit and compare that with the number you're getting at 100. And see what effect it has on the sensitivity of this metric to the effect of the mitigations that were put in place. So it's kind of an experiment to see if we can improve this metric by making it a little more sensitive to the overall 24-hour average. That's my point.
Thank you. The air continues to be bad on the Napomo Mesa about a quarter of the time. I've received 8 early air aware alerts in the last 30 days. State parks declared that the dust emissions had been reduced below the 1939 modeled emissions, I disagree. I wouldn't be getting frequent air alerts if the air was healthy. I can make a computer model of who will win the World Series, but my computer model isn't a fact. Only the results will bear out who wins the World Series. During this state park closure to vehicles due to the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a significant reduction in dust emissions. The Desert Research Institute published that the dust emissions decreased by 46%. The emissions between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. during October of 2020, before the state park was reopened, would be a true measure of abatement rather than the theoretical computer modeling, because we know what the emissions were when there was no riding. I would implore the Air Pollution Control Board to exert some more control over state parks to employ more mitigation to move toward healthy air quality. Unfortunately, the Air Pollution Control Board has become the Air Pollution Discussion Board. Action speaks louder than words. More needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Linda Reynolds.
Good morning. My name is Linda Reynolds. I am a resident of the Napomo Mesa. And first of all, I want to thank you all for what you're doing. And I do want to agree, and I realize that this has been a very expensive project, because it's been a very expensive project for me personally, because I've been showing up at meetings, including coastal commissions, for at least 10 years. And of course, over this 10 years, I've developed this rather raspy voice, even though I do stay in a good part of the afternoons. And as Mr. Harris said, we are still, we're our own metric. The Napomo Mesa is our own, we're our own metric of human beings down there. And the fact that we can look out our windows and we can see the air, we breathe the air, even with filter systems and staying in, it still is a serious issue. So it's nice to have metrics and numbers, and believe me, I'm just a senior citizen who is not looking at metrics every day, but I do implore the idea of why we still want to know why we are still having this issue, when on windy days I can go up to Morro Bay and they have long, wide beaches and there's not an air quality issue and there's a heck of a lot of wind up there. Or I can go to Oso Flaco also. I moved up here, my husband and I moved up here from Huntington Beach, which has a wide sweep of beaches and a lot of wind. So something's out of kilter here. And I was a little surprised to learn that we still, that we're, I guess we're not spending any more money on plantings, if I understood that correctly. So I still think that the issue isn't really seriously being handled. We can do metrics. I bet you're going to be doing metrics for at least 10 more years, and we're going to still be choking. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, Dorothy Hines.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Dorothy Hines, and I too want to thank you for what you folks are doing. I reside also on the Napomo Mesa, and I'd like to start with the bottom line, and that is that the danger imposed by the quality of air that I can see, and I don't think we should see air, has not been abated during the prime time daylight hours. And so I do appreciate the fact that going away for this 24-hour thing is at least a good step in the right direction. And although progress has been made in some areas, both the CDF and the Mesa 2 monitors continue to land in the airnow.gov highest 10 for hourly pollution readings in the USA many times this year. It seems daily. and you heard it a few minutes ago, I receive an air quality alert, and it just comes pretty much daily. Your requirement states that the Department of State Parks and Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Division, eliminate emissions in excess of naturally occurring emissions from the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area that contribute to downwind violations of the state and federal PM10 air quality standards, end of quote. The APCD report that I did read before this meeting on the possible compliance contains various charts, graphics, which we've seen today in very, very excellent presentations, and they speak to achieving simplicity and accuracy. Perhaps the most simple and accurate measurement might be to measure air quality of beaches up and down the coast of California. And coming up with actual data of what other beaches experience in real time compared to what we experience might provide the simplicity and accuracy as opposed to using modeled data. Human health is at stake, and I realize that my voice is raspy as well because I've been through this for 12 years. Particulate matter is dangerous, and I think that is something we really need to keep in front of us. It is dangerous. And while I appreciate your continued efforts and perseverance, I will end on the same bottom line. The danger imposed by quality of air on the Napomo Mesa has not been abated sufficiently in our waking hours. And so I will appreciate continued efforts along this line and action. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we'll have Yvonne Williams.
Good morning. I'm Yvonne Williams, and I'm a Napomo Mesa resident. I'm here today along with my neighbors on the Mesa, and like them, for at least 8 to 10 years, we've been following this issue very closely and experiencing it. We live it every day. I truly appreciate the efforts that have gone into addressing the problem by the APCD, by this board, and by the folks that operate the park. I'm not a scientist. I'm here to remind the board that this is very much a human issue. This issue affects us as human beings. It's a public health issue. And so unfortunately, you didn't get to see data for this year on the charts today. Last month, we had a period of 3 days in a row with very, very bad air on the Mesa. And just last Friday, another event. So clearly, as my neighbors have said, the problem still persists. Yes, there are fewer exceedances, but to say that it's a 39% improvement, well, what does that really mean? Two-thirds of the time, it's not improved. And so, you know, we would ask you to consider the thousands of people who live and work and go to school on the Napomo Mesa every day. This is how we live. And we don't all have the ability to shelter indoors with our HEPA filters cranking away. You know, people work outside for a living. They can't just stop working. So we would seriously ask you to keep that in mind. And thank you.
Thank you. That's all the speaker slips I have. Or anybody else? Okay. Close public comment and we'll go to board member questions or comments. Oh. Mr. Andrews?
I would be interested in hearing district representative or maybe SAG comment on two things. One is there were a couple of references to using 2020 as a control instead of OSOFLACO, and also comparing possibly using real-time comparisons to other California coastal situations that are similar. In response to these comments, so these folks can kind of get a perspective of your thoughts.
Yeah, I can handle that, and Professor Bauer wants to add anything, you're certainly welcome. You know, 2020 It's true, there was, for most of the year, due to the COVID pandemic, there was no riding on the dunes. But, you know, if you look at the data, we had about the same number of wind events in 2020 as we did last year, but we had more exceedances of the state standard in 2020. So, you know, I think if we went, if 2020 is the benchmark, then we've already exceeded, we've already met that benchmark and gone past it. You know, the issue with that is it takes a while for, it's not the riding, it's not the active riding on the dunes that creates dust. It's not like people are ripping around and they're causing rooster tails that then go inland. And it's not their tailpipe emissions either. It's the fact that the off-roading destroys vegetation, or historically has destroyed vegetation and disrupts the dune surface. And we're not exactly sure of the mechanism, but it's clear from the data that, you know, open sand that's been sitting there for months or years is a lot less emissive when the wind blows than sand that's recently been driven all over. But it takes time. You know, we could ban all the vehicles today, or as in 2020, riding could stop on a one day, and it takes a long time, years, decades, for that vegetation to come back unless we're actively helping it along by doing plantings. And it takes some period of time, maybe not decades, but it takes some period of time for that open sand to kind of revert back to its baseline emissivity. And there is some data that state parks, or that DRI under contract with state parks, collected that kind of gets at that sort of time scale. But, you know, so 2020, yes, vehicle riding stopped, but it's not like 2020 represents what the park would be if riding had never happened. And as I mentioned, we had more exceedances in 2020 than we do than we did last year. But any metric you want to look at, 2024 looks better than 2020. And then with regard to looking at air quality up and down the coast and other coastal areas, I mean, this gets to the fundamental fact that as much as we would prefer there to be no exceedances of these standards downwind or anywhere in the county, there is a natural component to the PM10 emissions or the PM10 concentrations that we're seeing in Napomo. And even if there'd never been any riding down there, there would be sand dunes. That's a natural feature of the landscape. When you have sand dunes, when you have high winds, you're going to get PM10 generated. And so the question has always been, how much of this is natural, would have happened if vehicles had never been on the beach, and how much of it is caused by the continued use of these off-highway vehicles. And that's, you know, that's what the modeling gets at. Professor Bauer briefly showed a picture of 1939 aerial photography versus today, and you can see there was a lot more, the vegetation is different. There's actually more vegetation today in front of Oso Flaco than there was back then. So anyways, the beach, all of which is to say, like, more the beach at Morro Bay, the beach down in Santa Maria, Guadalupe, they don't have that extensive dune system, and that's because of just, you know, the shoreline and the way the waves work and the fact that Santa Maria River comes in and dumps a bunch of silt offshore. So they're not really good analogs for what the Oceano Dunes would look like today if there'd never been any off-roading there. So that's why we haven't looked at those. We did have a PM10 monitor in Morro Bay years ago, and we no longer do, but it did not show nearly, you know, the levels are much, much lower than what we saw then contemporaneously at downwind of the ODSVRA, and, you know, less than what we see now. So
questions or comments?
All right, we'll move on to item number six, public comments on matters not on the agenda. See any requests for that? So we'll go on. We'll have a item number seven. The next scheduled meeting is on Wednesday, October 15th. And I'll actually take a motion to close the meeting.
Can I just ask a question? So what are we going to do with this? With this guideline, are we going to adopt this into our SOA, or are we just going to, what are we going to do with this?
Yeah, we can take direction from you guys. I mean, we can certainly continue to calculate it and, you know, bring back the results to you. And
I would suggest that we continue to calculate it as well as calculating it at the other sites, including also Flacco.
Okay.
Because I think it would be a good idea, if we're going to look at this measurement, to look at it independent of the modeling, have some at least some way to look at it independent of the modeling. So, and also Flacco, although not ideal, at least I think is a reasonable control for us to be looking at and being sure that we're, you know, not straying away from it, at least, that we're holding steady or getting closer to it, as opposed to straying away from it.
I could just raise a question with the council. Is there any?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just staff direction. What I was going to suggest is if your hearing board is interested in amending the SOA to include this new metric, that's something that we could do at our October 15th meeting. It could be, you know, sort of worked on between now and then, but we could put ourselves in a position to amend the SOA at that point if we wanted to. Right now, I think we're just are scheduled to have an annual report and review at that hearing. So if that's the direction the board wants to go, then we should probably advise staff that you'd like to at least put yourselves in a position where you could amend the SOA. So today, our hearing notice doesn't allow us to take any action to amend the SOA, but we could at a future meeting if we get direction from your board to do that.
I'd be interested in seeing the 2024 raw data analyzed, which wasn't provided today as well.
It's in the staff report. So the SAG did not have the 2024 data in their, you know, when they did it. But then in preparing the staff report, so this one, it's in there. It's the figure, it's the second figure, which also has MESA 2. And you can see that 2024, the metric ticks down a little bit for CDF versus 2023.
What page is that at, Carl?
Sorry, what was that?
What page is that?
You know, unfortunately, we don't have page numbers in here, but it's... I can pass this down if that's easier.
Okay, thank you. All right. I see it. Thank you.
But Tim, just to clarify the point, if we were to provide direction to staff as two gentlemen here have suggested, that would not require changing the SOA.
So as I understood the request, it was just that the staff continue to use this metric and present it to you in October. I don't think that requires a motion, because you're really just directing your staff how you'd like to receive information at that next meeting. If, on the other hand, you wanted to try to incorporate this metric into the SOA formally, we would need to have a hearing where we would amend the SOA. And since we have a hearing set for October 15th, we could do it there if that's what the board wanted to do. Or, you know, at this point, all the board needs to decide is it wants to be in a position to do that, in which case we'll prepare a notice for that October 15th hearing that includes a possible amendment to the SOA with regard to this metric or any other change that you want to make.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
So at this point, providing direction to the APCO in regards to both incorporating the actual emission data as well as, I'm sorry, you wanted the 2024?
Well, I think it's there. I just hadn't seen it.
Okay.
And you'll see the complete 2024 as well as 20. Well, I guess you won't see 2025 in October. You'll just see 2024.
Yeah. Well, we'll have more data. You know, we'll be three quarters of the way through the year by then. So, you know, a better picture.
So, Alyssa, as I understand it, the board is directing us to put themselves in a position to potentially amend the SOA in October to include this new metric.
Yeah, I just like to kind of clarify my thinking on it. I really appreciate the conversation and discussion among the board members on this. But what I heard is that the metric has a very high correlation, appears to, of historic data, and appears to possibly have a good correlation to what could be characterized as compliance. And that it would be beneficial to have, now that we've just established that metric, to maybe have more history and more experience with it, possibly the next year or two. And so I would really like to make it clear that if the board concurs, that we advise the district to continue to utilize this monitor, keep it current, and make it available for comparison to the modeled results for possible use in the future. And if the board at some point chose to move away from the modeled compliance to a numerical compliance or metric, that this would be a good candidate if it continues to demonstrate that it has a good correlation to the modeled results. So that's kind of my thinking on it. I'm not saying we switch it or propose to switch it today or even next year, but at some point, the hearing board might say, hey, you know, we're really satisfied with this and we would prefer to have a metric as opposed to a model result. That's a good option.
Everybody? No.
Sort of the conversation, it was my understanding that the metric was kind of to be used, or we requested it to be developed, to be used to determine climates with SOA, right? But we still use, and I'm just asking, are we still using the modeling results with the, you know, baseline of 166 metric tons per day, and we're at 148 right now? That's for rule 1001 compliance? Is that correct?
That's for compliance with the SOA.
That's for compliance with the SOA.
Yeah. Currently, we use the modeling to determine compliance with the SOA, and that
okay.
What you just cited are the results from the most recent modeling.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit confused on what do we use for compliance with Rule 1001?
So Rule 1001, which was passed back in 2011, requires state parks to establish a control site monitor and a monitor downwind of the riding area and then compare concentrations. And so whenever the riding area monitor is above 55, the control site monitor, it can't be more than 20% higher than the control site monitor. And if it is, then that's a violation of Rule 1001.
Okay, so you already have a hard and fast.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
That's all I wondered. Thank you.
Is there any question in regards to the direction at this point?
Yeah. So what is the direction at this point?
I believe we need a motion and a second and a vote.
So if, as I understood the direction, it was that the board wants to, at its October 15th hearing, be in a position to possibly amend the SOA to incorporate this metric among other measures. But I don't know if that's the case or not, Mr. Chair, but that's what I thought I was hearing.
You don't have to have a motion to direct staff. If somebody makes a motion, you're ordering staff basically to bring it to the hearing. So what council was saying before was if you just want to provide staff direction to include it, then that's fine. But if you want us to have a hearing to be able to add it to the SOA, then we need to notice it. That takes a motion.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, if we're going to do that, we should probably have a motion, and that would be to direct staff to put you in a position to hold a hearing to potentially amend the SOA at the October 15th meeting.
Would somebody like to forward a motion?
I just have a comment. I think Member Anders said that maybe at some point, and I would concur with this. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that maybe sometime in the future, after we get some more data and see how that metric shakes out and correlates with the metric we have now, the modeling that we have now. So I don't think I'd be in favor of modifying the SOA at this point to include the metric. I believe Dr. Bauer doesn't really recommend that we use that as a hard and fast reason to increase or decrease measures out at the dunes. And my opinion is I don't think that we should put it in the SOA at this point and just use it for...
If I understand Tim correctly, we can't. It isn't notice for us to change the SOA at this point.
Okay, I thought we were considering that for the next meeting.
We could adopt a motion today to direct to explore putting the emission data into the modifying the SOA, but that requires an unnoticed hearing, which we don't have here today.
Yeah, so let me just say that to McNulty again. So the question is, when you meet in October, do you want to have a staff report and review of the data that's been accumulated, much like we had today? Or do you want to be positioned such that if you wanted to, you could amend the SOA to incorporate this new measure? That's really what we're asking.
Take the input from the
board. I think we should be in a position to at least discuss amending the SOA to incorporate this at our next meeting.
So then we should have a motion to that effect if that's what we want to do.
Okay. If we're in concurrence on that, I'll accept a motion. Dr. Lapidus?
Okay, I'll make the motion. I'll try to make the motion. I propose that the hearing board direct staff to continue to monitor and refine the metric that we proposed today for possible use in the future, and that the board reserve the right to amend the SOA at our next meeting should we deem it appropriate.
Okay.
So we need a second on that and a vote.
I'll second that. You have discussion?
Any discussion?
After the second, do we get it?
You can have the opportunity.
Yes.
Okay, I think we have some comments here.
As I understand the motion now, it is to have staff bring the data analysis to you for potential discussion about changing the SOA, and I think that's a reasonable thing to do. The metric as we proposed it, I think, is in its roughest form at the moment, and could use a little refinement that Carl is going to do in terms of taking out some of the days that don't have obvious dust emissions from the park. And if the analysis for Mesa 2 and Oso Flaco is something that you would like to consider, I think that staff would be willing to give you recommendations about the potential data analysis and how it might inform the SOA and a potential revision of the SOA. I think it would be premature, and I'm not trying to tell you your business at all, but to contemplate including this metric very quickly. until we get a sense of where it's going. And I think it also potentially adds confusion to the SOA, because right now compliance is a decision on compliance. The assessment is made on basically one outcome, right? And that's whether the current landscape emits more dust than the pre-disturbance. Very simple, yes or no. If you then include the metric, what if those what if the metric goes opposite to what the modeling suggests? Or what if you've got two decision points and you've got no way to arbitrate them, right? So that's something you would need to think about. How do we assess compliance, given that there are two things now that potentially suggest compliance or not? So that gets a little problematic, and it's something that, you know, you need to reflect on. And I would suggest that, you know, staff could do the analysis, bring back the results, hopefully show consistency, and then you could make a more informed decision about whether there is a need to revise the SOA as it's currently configured. Thank you for listening to me.
Yeah, what I heard, and the reason for my motion is just first of all to direct the staff to continue to refine the metric, and secondly, not necessarily to amend the SOA at the next meeting, but leave the window open, because I heard some of the members wanting to have that option. So I just wanted to clarify that.
I believe the motion provides
for that. That's my understanding of the motion.
Any further questions?
If I could just further clarify, because my understanding of the motion does direct staff to return in October with an amendment to the SOA.
So when we notice the October hearing, we would notice it to include a potential amendment to the SOA. And we would have to have something that would be the substance of that. But it would be for the board to consider at that point, after hearing from the public and from the petitioner and from the respondent.
Okay, so staff would not be providing any documentation ahead of the meeting in support of that item on the agenda?
No, I think it would. I think in order for the board to be in a position to actually do something, there would have to be at least an item in the agenda packet that would allow them to consider that information and take that potential action.
Okay. So the motion is as Mr. Anders makes it, which is to continue to monitor and refine the metric, and the board reserves the ability to amend the SOA at the October 15th, 2025 meeting. So I have the motion made by you to continue to monitor and refine the metric, and the board reserves the ability to amend the stipulated order of abatement at the October 15th, 2025 meeting. Okay. Motion is made by Director Anders, seconded by Member Lapidus. Are we ready for a roll call vote?
Yes.
Yeah, I would just encourage, as we discussed, I would encourage APCD and the SAG to bring us data regarding Mesa 2 and Oso Flacco as well.
Just a clarification. I mean, what we have here is a stipulated order between the districts and state parks. So maybe Mr. McNulty can opine. We never, you know, the board never made the findings that are necessary for a contested abatement order. So whatever we would bring to you for possible adoption would need to have state parks concurrence. The board cannot unilaterally amend the SOA. Is that?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Are we ready for a roll call vote?
Yes.
And just to clarify one more time, Member Anders made the motion, seconded by Member Lapidus. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Member Johnson.
Yes.
Member Reddy.
Yes.
Member Lapidus.
Yes.
Member Anders.
Yes.
Member Anderson.
No.
Motion passes 4-1.
Okay. Again, bounced around a little bit, but our next hearing date is Wednesday, October 15th, and I'll accept a motion for closing the meeting.
So moved.
Seconded.
Okay. Thank you.